Hello and good morning. In the past few days, and no doubt also expected in the next few days, we are hearing and reading a lot about Russia. Of course, you, my dear listener, is most likely to be one of the young people who may think I'm talking about football, and especially that England has qualified for the 21st FIFA World Cup tournament scheduled to be held in Russia between the 14th of June and the 15th of July. I would like to wish to talk about this wonderful event, but I'm not about to become a football pundit and give an opinion on the games and how our team played. I personally have a passion for football, and I support one of the leading English clubs. No, I shall not tell you which one. And I watched at least the latest game against Lithuania. A bit lackluster, if you want my opinion. But England had already qualified, and there was no need to burst any boilers, except to maintain the team's pride. As it happened, a penalty kick by Harry Kane, the team captain, secured our win. Well, so far I've been talking about Russia in the context of our football team's qualifying. But in reality, my main aim this morning is to talk about Russia itself. It may be of low interest to you to recall that during the month of October, Russia, at least in part, will be celebrating or commemorating, depending on the mood, the centenary of the Bolshevik Revolution that shook the world in 1917. At the tail end of the First World War. The repercussions of this revolution is still with us, and we will live with its consequences, regardless of whether we are a communist state or not. Most significantly, Russia itself, at the present day, is living within the shadows of that revolution, although in theory it had discarded communism since the so-called glasnost of President Gorbachev. I haven't had a chance to visit Moscow, but everyone I know who did visit that city talks of it as a highly sophisticated city full of the delights of modern-day living. I have, however, visited St. Petersburg, which used to be Leningrad in the days of the Bolsheviks, and I do attest that it was a delightful city, quite picturesque, especially with its myriad bridges and rivers. It is the site where the Russian Revolution's first shots were fired. There is much on the radio and the television these days about Russia, and it is difficult, for me at least, to discern whether the Russian Revolution had actually ended or not. We hear so much about the disgruntled Russians who feel they are oppressed and unhappy, about the corruption and lack of transparency. We hear that dissidents are being jailed or even surreptitiously assassinated. More importantly, the world is having to cope with more overt communist regimes around, especially China, North Korea, and Cuba. And even more seriously, is the fact that many countries, especially in the Third World, are using all the tricks of governing that the Soviets had developed in order to oppress their people and plunder their country's wealth. So, the question I always ask myself is this. Did Karl Marx, who made his mark while a fugitive from Austria to England, and by the way, he's buried in the North London Cemetery. Did he mean to have his theories implemented in what was obviously that obscure country, Russia? Or, in fact, his main purpose was to establish his principles in what was Britain at the height of its industrial revolution? He was hoping that he could have the masses of laborers here rally around him and thus put his theories into the test. History, however, tells a different story. The Russians had suffered so badly in the war, lost over 1 million people, and then the ordinary people found themselves bereft of any means of decent livelihood and no hope. It could not, therefore, have been difficult for the forefathers of the Russian Revolution, mainly Lenin, to mobilize the population to support the rallying cry to overthrow the Tsar and get him and his family killed and then take over control of Russia. Well, as they say, the rest is history. But I wish to mention an important fact about Baha'u'llah, the founder of the Baha'i Faith, whose bicentenary Baha'is around the world are celebrating at present. And we just had two celebrations recently in our area, one in Cobham and one in Godalming. Baha'u'llah, while actually being banished from his homeland, Persia, now Iran, had sent messages to most of the leading heads of state at the time. Beginning in September 1867, Baha'u'llah wrote this series of letters to the world leaders of his time, addressing, among others, Emperor Napoleon III, Queen Victoria, Kaiser Wilhelm I, Tsar Alexander II of Russia, Emperor Franz Joseph, Pope Pius IX, Sultan Abdulaziz, and the Persian ruler Nasiruddin Shah, inviting them to relinquish their oppression and deal fairly with their people, as well as relinquish excesses of spend and weaponry. In those letters, Baha'u'llah openly proclaimed his station. He spoke of the dawn of a new age. But first, he warned there would be catastrophic upheavals in the world's political and social order. To smooth humanity's transition, he urged the world leaders to pursue justice. He called for general efforts at disarmament and urged the world rulers to band together into some form of commonwealth of nations. Only by acting collectively against war, he said, could a lasting peace be established. Except for Queen Victoria, who was quite conciliatory and benevolent in her reply, all the names I mentioned found their demise in very ignominious circumstances. Queen Victoria, on the other hand, responded in a kind and considerate manner, and this stood her well. My hope is that this world can now begin this glorious transformation to a peaceful, equitable life for all people within the shadow of a spiritual unity and tranquility. Goodbye.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not keep up to date with The Sound of Surrey by listening live at brooklandsradio.co.uk or through our free mobile app.